Hello, and welcome to this session covering the fundamentals of Network Policy Server. My name is Seth Wolf. In today's session, we'll discuss Network Policy Server in Windows Server 2008 and how to implement network access protection. Let us start this session by going into more detail on exactly what we'll be covering. One of the most time-consuming challenges for administrators is ensuring that computers that connect to private networks are up to date and meet the preset health policy requirements. Enforcing requirements is even more difficult when the computers, such as home computers or traveling laptops, are not under the administrator's direct control. Yet failure to keep computers that connect to the network up to date is one of the most common ways to jeopardize the integrity of a network. The Network Policy Server acts as a health policy server for managing these connected computers. We're going to start today's session with an overview of Network Policy Server architecture, and we'll examine its functionality. Network Access Protection, which I'll refer to for the rest of the session as NAP, provides components that help administrators enforce compliance with health policies for network access or communication. We'll see how to deploy and configure NAP. Network Policy Servers are linchpins in an enterprise computer access system. It is important to monitor these servers and maintain them for high availability. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of knowledge that is helpful but not essential for this session. To assist you, we have listed the areas that may be helpful to be familiar with either prior to this session or the reference afterwards. You should have a good understanding of network access technologies, like VPNs and 802.11 wireless access systems. Although we won't go into the details of DHCP, it will benefit if you have some experience with DHCP. While not necessary, it will help if you have some familiarity with remote authentication dial-in user services, or RADIUS, either with RADIUS servers or RADIUS protocols. To cover this topic mentioned in the early slide and to keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we'll introduce you to the Network Policy Server, which I'll refer to for the rest of the session as NPS. We'll see how it can play a valuable role in maintaining the integrity of an internal computer network. Then we'll see how to deploy and configure NAP. We'll see how NAP works and how it employs NPS. Then we'll take a look at some best practices. Then we'll see how to enable debug tracing and how it can be used for monitoring and troubleshooting connectivity problems. And finally, we'll see how to use load balancing and how to set up a fallback server. We'll also see various techniques for deploying backup recovery plans to maintain a high availability network access system. The move to Windows Server 2008 can help you realize a more efficient and automated environment. We actually have a way to measure and help you map out these improvements with what we call the Infrastructure Optimization Model. The Infrastructure Optimization Model from Microsoft helps customers understand and subsequently improve the current state of their IT infrastructure and what that means in terms of cost, security risk, and operational agility. Dramatic cost savings can be realized by moving from a basic unmanaged environment towards a dynamic environment. Security improves from highly vulnerable in a basic infrastructure to dynamically proactive in a more mature infrastructure. Microsoft Windows Server 2008 includes many new security, management, and automation features that can help you move more easily towards a dynamic and people-ready environment. Let's start with a brief overview of how NPS works. NPS allows you to create and enforce organization-wide network access policies for client health, connection request authentication, and connection request authorization. With NPS, you can centrally configure and manage network access authentication, authorization, and client health policies with features such as a RADIUS server, a NAP policy server, and a RADIUS proxy. We'll be covering these features in detail later on in the session. NPS is the successor to Internet Authentication Services, or IAS, that is shipped with Windows 2000 Server and Windows Server 2003. Network Policy Server, which we refer to for the rest of the session as simply NPS, is the Microsoft implementation of the RADIUS standard and supports all the major RADIUS RFCs. MPS runs mostly on Windows Server 2008 platform and provides significant advantage over IIS, most notably the ability to support client computer access with NAP. MPS can be used to authenticate many different types of connections, including wireless 802.1x access points. It also supports home computers using VPNs or dial-up services to connect to an organization's internal network. And it supports wired network computers through 802.1x and DHCP to maintain comprehensive reliability within an internal network. MPS only provides policy definitions and enforcement. It is not an authentication source. When an access request is made to MPS, it assesses it against its policies and then uses Active Directory to authenticate to the user or device. Now let's see how MPS coordinates the authentication process. In the first step of MPS authentication, the user requests access to the network. The network device is the RADIUS client, and in this scenario, it is the network switch. The RADIUS client then replies and requests the user credentials. In this first step, no IP address has been assigned yet, so it employs Layer 1 and Layer 2 communications. The device then forwards the credentials and connection details onto MPS. This includes such information as the user name, the machine name, and the network type. This information is taken from the client so MPS can decide whether to allow this user access onto the network. These policy rules may be extremely fine-grained, so for example, as to only allow users through specific machines, connection methods, or time of day. MPS itself does not make the authentication decision, but evaluates the connection and then forwards the credentials onto Active Directory. The connection is then evaluated by the Active Directory. This information is then returned to MPS and then passed on to the switch. The switch replies back to the user and, if approved, provides the user with access to the network. Let's take a brief look at our demonstration environment. We've populated this demo environment with only one server, SEA-DC01, which has the DC, MPS, and DHCP roles installed. Our workstation, SEA-WRK-001, is set up to obtain an IP address by means of DHCP. Now let's see a demonstration on configuring the MPS and NAP policies. In our first demonstration, we'll take a look at the Microsoft Management Console, or MMC, and see how it can be used to manage the network policy server. Then we'll use the MMC to configure and review simple NAP policies. Let's start by taking a look at the MPS MMC. The MPS allows you to create and enforce organization-wide network access policies for client health, connection request authorization, and connection request authentication. At the root of the Network Policy Server Management Console, you can find a set of wizards that help you do things like set up NAP policy or a RADIUS server. The MPS helps you offer a very comprehensive and useful guide to understanding and setting up NAP. This section here offers a detailed explanation on how NAP enforcement works. The wizard offers a very helpful way to configure NAP and your NPS. This wizard offers a very easy way of setting up NAP enforcement servers, DHCP scopes, NAP remediation server groups, and NAP health policies. We'll be setting up DHCP NAP and RADIUS clients a little later on, so we'll cancel this wizard for now. To deploy NPS as a RADIUS server, a RADIUS proxy, or a NAP policy server, you must configure RADIUS clients in NPS. Radius clients do not process access request messages. Only a Radius service can perform that function. MPS, however, can be configured as both a Radius proxy and a Radius server simultaneously, so they can process some access request messages and forward other messages. While the Radius standard will be used for most scenarios, Microsoft MPS supports a wide range of third-party Radius client vendors. Connection request policies are sets of conditions and settings that allow administrators to designate which Radius servers perform the authentication and authorization of requests. Connection request policies can be based on many factors, including the time of day, the type of connection, and the IP address of the Radius client. We'll skip the network and health policies for now, and jump ahead to look at the remediation server groups. Remediation server groups are lists of servers on a restricted network that provide resources to bring clients into compliance with the health policies. A remediation server hosts the updates that NAP agents can use to bring computers into compliance. For example, a remediation server can host antivirus software signatures. Then, if a health policy requires that computers have the latest antivirus definitions, the remediation server can update non-compliant computers. You can configure MPS to perform Radius accounting. This accounting can log user authentication requests, access accept messages, access reject messages, accounting requests and responses, and periodic status updates. You can log accounting requests, authentication requests, periodic account status, and periodic authentication status. You can use this dialog box to configure the log files and designate where you want to store the accounting data. You can define what format to use for the log files. You can define how often to create new log files. And finally, this checkbox will define what to do if the disk fills up. A Windows Security Health Validator, or SHV, policy is a client health policy that establishes the requirements for computers that may connect to your network. When client computers attempt to connect to your network and their configuration does not match the SHV policy, their network connection is blocked and they are quarantined to a remediation network until they are brought into compliance. The MPS will validate the system health of clients against the configured network health policies. Network health requirements are defined by system health validators. Therefore, the system health validator needs to be configured. The default SHV is compatible with both Windows Vista and Windows XP SP2 clients, but not all features like spyware protection are included in the Windows XP SP2 agent configuration. The spyware protection option is not included in the Windows XP tab. For this demonstration, the system health policy will only require that Windows Firewall and automatic updating are enabled, although you could also require that computer virus and spyware protection be installed on the client computers in order to be considered healthy. Next, the health policies must be configured. These policies define the system health validation results that are interpreted by NPS. Health policies consist of system health validators and other settings that allow you to define the minimum computer requirements for the client computer that connect to your network. We'll create two policies. The first will apply to client computers that comply with our SHV. If we look in the list of SHV check types, we can see that there are various conditions that can define this health policy, that a client passes all or some of the SHV checks, or fails all or some of the SHV checks. You can define client health policies in MPS by adding one or more SHVs to the health policy. After a health policy is configured, you can add the health policy to the NAP-enforced network policy. In our environment, in order for the client computer to be considered compliant, it must pass all SHV checks. Again, this SHV check means that client computers must have both the Windows firewall and automatic updating enabled. Next, we'll define what it means for a client computer to be considered non-compliant. In this case, a computer will be judged as non-compliant if it fails any of the SHV checks. We finished configuring the health policies. Now we need to define the network policies that will tell NPS how to handle client computers as they come onto the network. Network policies are settings that allow you to designate who is authorized to connect to the network and the circumstances under which they can or cannot connect. First, we'll create a network policy that will grant full network access for healthy, compliant client computers. In our demonstration today, we're going to set our NPS to manage DHCP server access. The health policies will restrict access to only client computers that meet the specified criteria. There are lots of available conditions that you can define for whatever policy you want applied, such as day and time restrictions, windows or user groups, and radius client properties. You can create new health policies right here, but we'll just use the policy that we created earlier. For this health policy, we're only concerned that the computer passes the compliance check that we defined earlier, meaning the computer needs to have both Windows Firewall and automatic updates enabled. By selecting the option to grant access, we aren't actually allowing the computer onto the network. What we're doing is simply stating that computers that match the conditions of the policy will be allowed to be further evaluated. We'll configure those conditions in a moment. You can also enforce specific authentication methods, although for the sake of simplicity, in this demonstration, we will allow clients to connect without negotiating an authentication method. Constraints are additional parameters that are required to match the connection request. If a constraint is not matched by the connection request, MPS automatically rejects the request. You can constrain by many options, including day and time. The day and time restrictions option is very flexible. You can permit or deny specific days or times. For instance, you can deny access for specific days like Saturday or Sunday. Constraints are optional. If you do not want to configure constraints, click Next. On the Configuration Settings page, you can define what settings will be applied if the policies are not set. Using NAP enforcement settings, you can specify whether you want to enforce NAP for this network policy, and whether you want enforcement to be deferred. If you select Allow Full Network Access, NAP is not enforced for this network policy. For the full network access policy, we will not restrict network access. Now that we've defined a compliant policy, we need to create the non-compliant one. Again, we are going to use a DHCP server for our network access server. Then we'll add the health policies to our DHCP server. This time, we will select the non-compliant health policy that we created earlier. Again, even though we're selecting to grant access here, that only means that we're allowing the client's connection to continue to be processed. This doesn't mean that they will have unrestricted network access. Again, we will allow clients to connect without negotiating an authentication method. You can also set constraints for these policies. The other difference is that we will enforce network access protection in this policy. If you select Allow Full Network Access for a limited time, you can defer enforcement of the policy until the date and time you specify. The defer enforcement setting allows you to offer some flexibility to users even if they fail the compliance check. This could be useful if an important security patch has been released and you want to enforce that your users have enough time to get the patch installed before they are restricted from the network. If you select Allow Limited Access, NAP is enforced. You can also force non-compliant computers to be updated automatically. This could prove to be a very effective solution to implement to manage compliance in a large enterprise. However, we will leave the setting disabled so we can better test and manually adjust the settings on the client computer ourselves a little bit later on. There are many options that can be set to offer remediation for non-compliant computers. You can specify the remediation server group that clients can access for software updates. You can also direct your users with limited access to a web page for assistance. This could be a troubleshooting site to help them find out why they're restricted. The URL can also be a site where they can download virus updates or other security patches. Before you finish the NAP server settings, we'll set up tracing, which will track these events and log them to several files. You can use NetSH commands to enable and disable tracing for specific components or for all components. We'll open up the command prompt to start tracing. We'll turn on verbose tracing within RAS for all events. This will allow us to capture all the information. Let's move on to the next item on the agenda. Now we'll cover deploying and configuring NAP. We'll examine how it works, how policies are evaluated, and how it employs NPS. We'll start by taking a look at how NAP works. NPS works as a policy server in conjunction with NAP components. System health requirements are defined as policies on NPS. NPS provides health policy checks and coordinates with Active Directory when the computer tries to connect to an access point or VPN server. NAP works with specific agents that are built into the client operating system. The client environment includes the system health agents, SHAs, a quarantine agent, QA, and an enforcement client, EC. The SHA checks the state of the client and declares its health. Each SHA is defined for a specific system health requirement. For example, there might be an SHA for antivirus signatures and an SHA for operating system updates. When a Windows client computer connects through DHCP or a VPN or a router, the system health validates state and what their health is. The access device then forwards the network access request onto the NPS. NPS can then provide the centralized authentication, authorization, and accounting for the connection request. NPS includes the System Health Validator, SHV, and the Quarantine Server, QS. The QS coordinates with the SHVs, which certify the declarations made by the health agents. Active Directory stores user and computer accounts and their network access properties for authentication network access. NPS itself does not make the authentication decision, but evaluates the connection and then forwards the credentials onto Active Directory. If a computer is not compliant, it is sent to a restricted network where the remediation servers can apply security updates, whatever else is needed to enable the compliance. Remediation servers consist of servers, services, and other resources that a non-compliant computer on the restricted network can access. These resources might store the most recent software updates or components needed to make the computer comply with health requirements. For example, a secondary DNS server, an antivirus signature file server, and a software update server can all be remediation servers. If it is compliant, then we allow it in, and the user has access to the corporate network. Now we'll take a look at the process of how policies are analyzed. NAP provides policy enforcement that helps ensure that computers connecting to the network meet predefined requirements for system health. Administrators can use a combination of policy validation and network access limitation components to control network access. NAP operates on a sort of processing pipeline, where requests are sent to a pipeline composed of various stages for analysis and action. Each stage takes the request as an in-out parameter. Each stage may return one of the following values: reject, accept, or discard. At the end of the pipeline, the request is transformed into the radius packet and sent back to the network. MPS policies are sequential, rule-ordered policies. One and only one policy applies to an access request. In machine main mapping, we pass in the statement of health, the machine name, and the identity type onto the machine name mapping part of the NAP pipeline. The machine name mapping logic ties a machine name to a specific security principle and directory. Best effort is made to translate the machine name into Windows NT 4.0 format. The next step is to create a temporary quarantine section in the memory of NPS. The machine account validator then evaluates the information that is passed to the NPS from the client. These components take the machine name and match it with whatever policy it falls into. The access decision is made by the quarantine evaluator section of the policy pipeline. The quarantine evaluator evaluates the client machine statement of health and makes an access decision based on the rule set. The post-quarantine evaluator passes the quarantine decision back to the network switch and the radius client. This information conveys whether the client has full access to the network or if some remediation action is needed to be performed first. Now we'll see a demonstration of configuring NAP for DHCP. In this demonstration, we will enable and configure client settings, create a DHCP scope, and show what happens when a non-compliant computer comes onto the network. We'll begin this demonstration with a Windows Vista client computer and review this computer's current configuration. First, we'll open up the Windows Firewall properties and notice that we get a security warning because the firewall is currently disabled. While not advisable, this was done intentionally for the purpose of this demonstration. Similarly, Windows Update is also disabled. So what we have is a client computer with no firewall and no way to automatically receive Windows updates. We've set up a simple MMC console that contains some tools that we need for adjusting the client settings. First, we're going to go into the Services console for this computer and configure the Network Access Protection Agent service to start automatically. Without this service, the System Health Agent on the Windows Vista computer will not respond appropriately to health checks by NPS. We have one more NAP client configuration setting to make. and the NAP Client Configuration Console will enable the DHCP Quarantine Enforcement Client. This provides DHCP enforcement for NAP, which we'll see in just a moment. So with these settings in place, we'll restart this computer and move to the Windows Server 2008 server to configure the DHCP settings. DHCP in Windows Server 2008 works well with NAP. We'll go ahead and define a new DHCP scope for this server. We'll call this the NAP scope. Next, we'll define the start and end IP addresses for this DHCP scope. This small IP address scope uses a 20-bit mask, resulting in a subnet mask of 255.255.240.0. We don't need to add any exclusions for this configuration. Since we'll be implementing NAP security, we'll use a shorter lease duration to provide increased monitoring of our network and the client computers. We'll configure the scope options manually in a moment. But first, we'll activate this new scope. So far, what we've done isn't much different than what you'd do for Windows Server 2003 DHCP server. Now we'll look at the NAP settings. First, we'll go into the properties for the NAP scope and configure it to use the default NAP profile. Next, we'll configure the scope options for the default user class. This will include supplying a default DNS server address to DHCP clients, and our domain name of contoso.com. Again, this is for the default user class. Next, we'll define the scope options for the default NAP class. The DNS server addresses will be the same. However, the NAP domain name will be called restricted.contoso.com. Client computers who fail their health validator checks will still be assigned an IP address, but they will be in a restricted domain. Now we'll move back to our client computer. This is a standard Windows Vista client. It is important to remember that the NAP service and the DHCP NAP enforcement client must be configured, either manually or through group policy, before this will work. We configured these both at the start of this demonstration. If you look in the notification area, we can see this message that tells us that network access is limited until we update this computer. We can see that we've been assigned an IP address, but we are in the restricted.contoso.domain. This tells us that we have failed the compliance health check. We can see that the firewall is not enabled. Remember, computers must pass all SHV checks in order to be considered in compliance with the network access policy. Windows Vista makes it very easy to accomplish tasks that required many more steps in previous versions. For example, we can turn on the firewall with just a single click. You may also recall that we required Windows updates to be enabled on client computers before they could pass the SHV check, so we'll go ahead and enable this. Remember, there is also a setting that we could have configured on the NPS that would have automatically updated these settings for us. if we look at our network configuration again, we can see that we've been automatically moved to the unrestricted network. No further intervention was required. Let's return to the presentation and look at what's next. Let's move on to the next item on the agenda. Now we'll see how to enable debug tracing and how its logs can be used for monitoring and troubleshooting access connectivity problems. We'll also see some of the tools that can assist us with this process. Before we examine our troubleshooting options, let's discuss some best practices. It is important to provide fast, reliable connectivity between your NPS and Active Directory. A common design approach is to install NPS on the domain controller, serving as the global catalog. This will minimize the amount of time it takes for authentication. However, it is important to ensure that adequate capacity exists first. If authenticating many users from multiple domains, consider using Radius proxies and then distributing the request load by domain. It is important to specify Radius clients by IP address or CIDR notation. This is particularly true if there are a large number of clients. Specifying Radius clients using DNS names significantly increases startup time due to delays caused by name resolution. Specify access permission by remote access policy, not by individual user attributes. When using logs, please log wisely. Remember, logs require a significant amount of computational overhead. Log only what is needed, and only when troubleshooting a specific problem. It is best to log to local sources. If logging for auditing purposes to SQL Server, log on to a local instance, and then replicate from there. Now we'll see how tracing log files can be used for monitoring and troubleshooting. Tracing logs are a valuable tool for monitoring and debugging the operation of NPS. There are many log files available, each tracking a different aspect of NPS operation. Tracing can be turned on using the netsh ras set tracing star enabled command. The tracing log files are then sent to the system root tracing directory. Here are some of the tracing logs related to NAP and NPS. The IIS RAD log is the Radius server and proxy log. This logs all Radius protocol related operations. It will describe the ports that the server is listening on, and so forth. It may be useful for debugging wireless access point compatibility problems. The IIS SAM log file is the authentication, name mapping, and account validation log. The log is the most commonly used to trace files for NAP issues because it describes functions such as decoding usernames, binding to the domain controller, and verifying credentials. Is the heart of the IIS trace log files and is usually required to debug any authentication-related issues. It can be very useful if you're trying to troubleshoot an NPS failure. The IIS NAP log is the policy evaluation and quarantine evaluation log and may be useful for tracking clients that get quarantined. If you're trying to troubleshoot an NPS failure, you can use this log file. The IIS ACT file is the file and database logging file. It may be helpful for tracking down VPN connection problems. Microsoft Network Monitor can also be used for monitoring and troubleshooting NAP. Network Monitor provides information about the network traffic that flows to and from a computer's network adapter. By capturing and analyzing that information, you can prevent, diagnose, and solve many types of network problems. network monitor can be used to monitor and diagnose the performance of the NPS, gather information about statements of health, health remediation, and client quarantines. It is important to use the Corporate Preview Program build of Network Monitor 3.1 to get the statement of health parsers. Now we'll see a demonstration on examining applicable log files. In this demonstration, we'll look at some logs and traces that can be used for monitoring and troubleshooting NPS processes. To help you gather information to troubleshoot problems with NPS, the following troubleshooting tools are available: NPS Event Logging and Event Viewer, Network Monitor, Tracing, SNMTP Service, and System Monitor Counters. We're going to start by examining the NPS Event Viewer. To troubleshoot NPS in a system event log, ensure that event logging is enabled for all types of NPS events. This is enabled by default on the Service tab for the properties of an NPS. You do not need to have RAS tracing turned on in order to view these particular logs. You can see details here of the machine that's input into quarantine. When you open the particular event, you can drill down and see additional details of the event. Here we can see the health components required by the NPS were not enabled on the client computer. Viewing the authentication attempts in this log is useful in troubleshooting remote access policies. When you have multiple remote access policies configured, you can use the system event log to determine the name of the policy that accepted or rejected the connection attempt. Here we can see when the client computer was given full access. We can drill down and find the name of the exact policy that granted the client computer full access. Now let's return to the command prompt to stop our tracing. This will finish capturing all the information and then write it all to the files. Now we will look at the data that is currently being logged to these files. The tracing files can be found in the Windows Tracing folder. The NPS files are labeled IAS to maintain consistency, as IAS was the predecessor to NPS. Let's sort these files by name so it'll be easier to find what we're looking for. Then we can look at these IAS files and follow the NPS as it analyzes and processes the NAP request. We'll start by looking at the IAS SAM log file. The IAS SAM file tracks authentication, name mapping, and account validation requests. Opening that file, we see the initial request for obtaining and cracking the machine name from the statement of health. Opening up the IAS NAP file, we find the next step in the process. The IAS NAP file is the policy evaluation and quarantine evaluation log. Here you can see where the statement of health is evaluated against the various system health validators. We have one more item to cover today. For our last agenda item, we'll see how to use load balancing and set up fallback servers. We'll also see various techniques for deploying backup recovery plans to maintain a high availability network access system. NPS can also be used as a Radius proxy. NPS can be used as a Radius proxy to provide the routing and Radius messages between Radius clients, such as VPN servers or wireless access points, and Radius servers. When used as a Radius proxy, NPS is a central switching or routing point through which Radius access and accounting messages flow. proxy configurations are typically used in a number of different scenarios, most notably for load balancing in a high-volume environment. First, the RAID-less clients, such as wireless access points, dial-in servers, or 802.1x switches, communicate with the MPS proxy server. Then, the MPS proxy uses rules to send requests to other MPS servers, such as routing requests by a user's forest or domain. After the RAID-less server receives the proxied request, authentication and authorization processing occurs as usual. There are many tools available to help you back up, restore, and load balance NPS. NPS can be load balanced in a variety of ways. Most RAID-less clients can be configured with primary and fallback RAID-less servers. NPS can be load balanced with simple DNS RR, NLB, or hardware load balancers. It is unnecessary to use Microsoft Cluster Services. NPS installed as a RAID-less proxy can perform more intelligent load balancing in multi-forest, multi-domain environments. NPS configurations are stored locally and not replicated between servers. The NPS MMC allows administrators to back up and restore NPS configurations. These configurations are archived as XML files. You can also use the netsh command to automate exporting and importing NPS configurations. As a RAID-less proxy, NPS failover behavior is configurable. If one NPS fails, a backup NPS can take over. For our final demonstration, we see how to set up load balancing. In this demonstration, we will set up an NPS as a RAID-less proxy to demonstrate load balancing. Then we look at several techniques for backing up and restoring NPS settings. As you may know, the new client operating system, Windows Vista, is available now. This is IT Pro ADD-316, demo 4-1 in 3, 2, 1. Network policy server configurations are stored locally and not replicated between servers. The NPS MMC allows administrators to back up and restore NPS configurations as XML files. The system offers us a warning that the configuration file may contain the RAID-less shared secret. We'll save the file in a shared folder so it can easily be transferred to a backup NPS. We'll save the XML file with the name Policy Console. The netsh NPS export command is useful for troubleshooting and managing NPS configurations in small environments. Again, we'll save the file in the shared folder. This time, we'll call the file policyshell.xml. We'll need to use the Export PSK option in order to save the complete configuration, including the RAID-less shared secret. Now, we'll find these files and see how they match up. Here, you can see the two XML policy files, one created with a console, and the other created using netsh in the command prompt shell. The two files are identical and are shown in Windows Explorer having identical file sizes. We can use Internet Explorer to examine the contents of these XML files. We'll open both files and use tab browsing to easily compare them. If you view the content of these files, you'll see that they look identical. You can also use NetSH to automate configuration exporting and importing. On our primary NPS, we'll use NetSH NPS dump to export the NPS configuration file. This configuration file can be viewed in Notepad, as it's a plain text file. You can even edit it to fine-tune the NPS configuration before installing it on another computer. When you're ready to install this configuration on the clone server, use the netsh exec command. We'll just run that command on our primary server to see how easy it is to do. These configuration files can be used for cloning an NPS or in a disaster recovery scenarios. Let's see how to use our Policy Console NPS configuration file to restore the NPS configuration in case of disaster. We'll start by deleting the NPS network policies. Then, we'll go ahead and delete both the compliant and the non-compliant health policies. These dialog boxes are for warnings in case we are deleting these policies by accident. Now we'll use the NPS MMC import feature to import the previously saved configuration file. We'll grab the Policy Console XML file from the shared folder. After importing the configuration file, the NPS configuration has been restored to the server. Here's the compliant network policy granting full access. And here's the non-compliant network policy that restricts access. And here are the compliant and non-compliant health policies. In a high-volume environment, NPS can be used as a Radius proxy, forwarding requests to other Radius servers. To deploy NPS as a Radius proxy, we need to define a remote Radius server group. Then have the remote Radius server group use our primary NPS. The next step is to define a shared secret for the group to use. Complex load balancing parameters can be defined, but in most environments, it would be best to distribute the load equally. In high-volume environments, you can increase the number of concurrent authentication calls by allowed at one time by using the max current API registry value. Take caution not to overwhelm the domain controller. Typically, a value of 2 to 5 works best. You should never set the value of the max current API entry to more than 5. If the value you assign to max current API is too high, the NPS computer might put a heavy load on the domain controller. Because Windows Server 2008 and Windows Vista are built as part of a single development project, they share a number of new technologies across networking, storage, security, and management. Although many of these enhancements apply to either Windows Server 2008 or Windows Vista, when organizations deploy both operating systems, they will see how the combined client-server infrastructure provides even greater advantages. IT professionals who are administering a Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008 infrastructure will notice many improvements in how they control and manage their environment. For example, maintenance is simplified by the use of a single model for updates and service packs across client and server. Client computers can monitor for specific events and forward the events to Windows Server 2008 for centralized monitoring and reporting. Windows Deployment Services provides faster and more reliable operating system deployment. Network access protection features on Windows Server 2008 ensure that Windows Vista clients connecting to the network are compliant with security policies and are restricted from accessing network resources if not fully compliant. The reliability, scalability, availability, and overall responsiveness of the infrastructure are greatly increased by improvements made to both Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008. Clients can render print jobs locally before sending them to print servers to reduce the load on the server and increase its availability. Server resources are cached locally so that they are available even if the server is not, with copies automatically updating when the client and server are reconnected. Applications or scripts that need to run on both client and server can take advantage of the transactional file system to reduce the risk of error during file and registry operations and roll back to a known good state in the event of failure or cancellation. Policies can be created to ensure greater quality of service for certain applications or services that require prioritization of network bandwidth between client and server. Windows Vista clients are connecting to networks where Windows Server 2008 has been deployed can experience greatly improved communication speeds and reliability. Searching Windows Server 2008 servers from a Windows Vista client avails of enhanced indexing and caching technologies on both to provide huge performance gains across the enterprise. Native IPv6 support across all client and server services create a more scalable and reliable network, while the rewritten TCP/IP stack makes network communications much faster and more efficient. The new Server Message Block 2.0 protocol provides a number of communication enhancements, including greater performance when connecting to the file shares over high latency links, and better security through the use of mutual authentication and messaging signing. Terminal services on Windows Server 2008 has many improvements, including providing Windows Vista clients with remote access to internal resources through an HTTP gateway and remote applications that run as if on the local desktop. That just about wraps up the session. Let's review what we've covered so far. It's a challenge for administrators to ensure that computers that connect to private networks meet the organization's health policy requirements. Network Policy Server and Network Access Protection can be used to effectively protect networks. By using remediation servers and quarantine networks, remote computers can be updated to meet the mandated health policies. Rules for defining these policies may be extremely fine-grained. For example, as to only allow users through specific machines, connection methods, or time of day. This adds an additional layer of protection to a corporate network. NPS is a very flexible server application. It may be used to radius proxy, to allow for load balancing in a high-volume environment. It is also a very open platform, allowing third-party vendors and users to develop additional components and features. To get more information about the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help you. For the most comprehensive technical information about Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/add-316 for additional information about books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, or MOC, which includes e-learning, MS Press books, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals' support and implements solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. There are 22 online and instructor-led courses available that cover Microsoft Windows Server 2008. One of the most useful is 5934, which is an online collection composed of 5 clinics where you're introduced to this new features and functionality in Windows Server 2008. 5939 is another online clinic where you learn the new tools and improved features for server management and administration of Windows Server 2008. This includes PowerShell task automation, remote administration, performance, and diagnostic tools. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which has links to Microsoft Official Curriculum, specific technical articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are the assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with a basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to become a fully certified System Administrator, MCSA, or System Engineer, MCSC, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. The new Microsoft Certified Technology Specialist, MCTS, and Microsoft Certified IT Professional, MCITP, credentials provide IT professionals with a simpler and more targeted framework to showcase their technical skills in addition to the skills that are required for specific job roles. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you may find interesting. To help explain this further, here's Ian Brackenbury, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions and, through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.